Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Green Men and Mullins Show podcast here on Newcastle Fans TV. Myself and Sam have spoken to another NBE. This is our second one, Samuel.
I know. We've
done very well, haven't we?
Yeah. Stephen Miller, NBE, Paralympic legend. And a proper legend as well, as I go into on the podcast. Legend is a word that's bandied around a lot and sometimes loses the heft of its meaning, but a really inspirational kind of 45 minutes, 50 minutes, I think. Really, really lovely guy, and with a huge will to win.
Very much so. His determination throughout his career, his first Olympics was in 96. He's competing, obviously, it was the 2020, but obviously because of coronavirus, the 2021 Olympics now. In Tokyo.
So Atlanta 96.
Sydney 2000.
Sydney 2000. Athens 2004. Beijing 2008. London 2012. Rio 2016. So this will be his seventh Paralympic Games. Seven.
That's absolutely incredible. And that you talk about the determination in your interview, Sam, but the consistency at the top. You know, we talk about, obviously, you look at the, like, in terms of football, you Manchester United of this world, and you know, in terms of like English, like Premier League teams, but in what he's doing in his field, it's absolutely tremendous.
Unreal. To keep having that drive and determination for so long. Like, these Olympics are 4 years apart. Well, 5 years apart for this one, obviously, for obvious reasons, but 4 years apart to maintain. And he's only failed to medal at one, and that's because he needed a freaking hip replacement. That's unbelievable. So, yeah. An absolute sporting legend. And if you're not aware of his career, or you're not aware of him, and let's not forget, he also supports Newcastle United, so he's one of our own. This is why we have these people on to kind of help bring them a new audience and whatnot, because they deserve it, and they're unbelievable people.
They very much are. And The club throat is his domain. It is his baby in terms of the records. Like, the youngest Paralympian, Great Britain's youngest Paralympian to win gold in 1996 at 16, won bronze in Sydney. In training for the 2008 Olympics, got his world record throw 34.93 meters in 2008. So the consistency, even in 12 years, is absolutely incredible. Men's captain of the Paralympic team GB in 2012. MBEs, the Freedom of Cramlington, the list goes on, Sam. And he talks about his beloved Newcastle United, and it's quite a refreshing opinion on the club.
Yeah. Kind of an opinion that I sometimes wish I have sometimes, in the fact that just focus on what goes on the pitch, don't worry about the other stuff. But yeah, he knows a lot of, he's got a fantastic relationship with current, they're still icons and legends of Newcastle United, but he knows a lot of good people. And if you're watching this on, if you're, obviously you're listening to the podcast now, but if you do want to hop over to the YouTube and watch the YouTube, wow, I sounded about 80 years old then. If you want to hop over to YouTube and see the video interview, he does flash the medal. He does flash the gold, which is a prestigious honour, I feel, for this little show.
Oh, it's an incredible honour, a gold medal on a Green Men and Mullins show. We're very, very lucky. Very, very lucky to see something like that. But a big thanks to our sponsors, Beer52. Beer52.com is the place for the Euros to get your beer. You get to watch all the England matches. Make sure you've got Beer52 cans near you by your side as you celebrate England beating the likes of Scotland, Czech Republic. And, of course, Croatia on the 13th of June, which you would have already seen. So maybe get ready for the Scotland game on the 18th. But, Sam, just to finish off...
If you do go over to beer52.com/NFTV and get the introductory 8-can case, if you do it within the next, I think it's by the end of June, you do get a 10-can case instead of an 8. You get the two extra for free. So just think on, bear that in mind. Over 75,000 members they've got now. But yeah, sorry, continue.
No, I was just going to say that the Greer and Milner show is not a million miles away from 50 episodes. And we're not going to give names away in terms of what's coming up on the channel, but we've got a couple of guests lined up to get to nearly 50. And then number 50 itself could be quite a big one.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of time for them to pull out yet. So just let's just get this to next week first.
See, this is I'm trying to be the positive, and Sam always has to have a little bit of caution in this. But yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating to see these. We have got one more confirmed one at the minute, so but we'll leave that one for.
So you've got a show next week, hooray!
Yeah, definitely got a show next week. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Me and Sam have actually been very, very busy in the last week or so because we've both had our jab. Both had our first jab. Sam had his before me, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Because I'm really cool. That's why.
But I think, very briefly, what was your experience like at the jab?
Everything went fine.
Are you sure?
Broadly. If you ignore... I mean, right, so leading up to the jab, everything was fine. The jab was fine. And then 10 minutes after the jab, everything was fine. That I, you know, there was a little 10 minutes where I threw up twice and had to be nursed. But apart from that, everything fine. Don't know what you're on about. Just leave it out.
Fable wants to know very briefly. I got in, got the jab, felt like a tiny scratch, and I had a bit of a dead arm, but that's about it.
And I got a sticker for being a brave soldier.
I'm not going to tell you what I put in the text messages I sent the lads when you said that yesterday, because I don't think it's appropriate, but we'll leave that one for another day. But I'll tell you what I think we should do. I think we should get this podcast underway. And it's episode number 46 of the Greener Muller Show here on Newcastle Fans TV. And it's with Stephen Miller, MBE. Hello everyone, welcome back to the Greenwood and Mourner show here on Newcastle Fans TV. Today we are joined by a Paralympic legend, a man who has won 3 gold medals, but more importantly, supports Newcastle United. I think that's a little bit more important than the gold medals and maybe even MBE as well. It is, of course, Stephen Miller, MBE. Stephen, welcome to the Greenwood and Mourner show here on Newcastle Fans TV.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sam, this is another MBE. We've had two now in the Greenwood and Mourner show, and what a pleasure it is to get Stephen on, isn't it, Sam?
It is. I mean, let's not... I mean, the word legend is thrown around a lot. But for those who don't know, and you know, 3-time Paralympic champion, 3-time world champion, 3-time European champion, and you're still as determined as ever. Stephen, are you in training for Tokyo still?
Yeah, I've just got back from the European Championships, which were held in Poland last week. So, yeah, I performed pretty well. It's nice to be competing again. So, and then hopefully I can get in the team for Tokyo. The team selected towards the end of July. So I've got a few more weeks to get some good performances in and try and did my 7th Paralympic, so yeah, it'd be pretty cool to do that.
Stephen, I have to ask, because Sam obviously picks up perfectly about the 2020, well, that was going to be in 2021 Olympics in Tokyo, but where's the motivation come from? Because it's been several Olympics, like doing my research, your first one was in 1996, so where is that continued motivation coming from?
Yeah, it's quite unusual to do one sport for that long, you know. I've been competing now for this in my 25 years. I've been competing at the highest level. So, yeah, I think for me, it's just the love of the sport and the love of what I do. I enjoy the training. I enjoy just trying to get better every day. And yeah, you know, I get paid it for a stick as far as I can, and I can think of a lot worse things to do than that. So yeah, why not? Why not keep doing it as long as you can?
It is the longevity of your career, Stephen, that just staggers me. Like you say, your first Olympics was at Atlanta 1996, when I was 6 or 7 years old. You've gone through two Kevin Keegan eras, a whole Alan Shearer Newcastle career. You've gone through the whole of a Mike Ashley era. What gives you the determination after so long to keep going and to keep competing?
I think I'm just really, really stubborn. That's what my wife says anyway. I think I've got really good ability to just focus on one thing at a time, not get too carried away when things are going well, and not get too down when I'm going through tough times. So I think that's one thing that's really helped me. And also just trying to enjoy what I do and focus on that enjoyment and not get too obsessed about winning and losing, because, everyone likes to win and be the best, but you're not always going to win. So then, you can do it for a long time if you can stay healthy.
100%. I was just going to say, Stephen, when you were growing up as a young man and you wanted to get into the Olympic Games and become serious at what you do, who were your role models growing up? Who were the people that you looked up to?
Well, number one was my parents. I mean, they were unbelievable people and really inspired me. And a lot of my positive mindset is down to how they brought me up, how they raised me. I really look up to them. My other role models, my first coach when I was young was a Paralympic athlete. He was somebody that was a big role model for me. And he really taught me that importance of enjoying what you do and not taking it too seriously. He was a big influence on me. And then away from that, I think one thing that really inspired me as a young person, one moment I can remember, was watching Limpa Christie win the 100 meters in Barcelona. And I was only about 12 when that happened. And it really, I thought, wow, that's incredible to be able to do that and win a gold medal for your country. I thought, it'd be amazing to do that. So, that was a big moment that inspired me. And of course, when I think about Newcastle United, which has been a massive part of my life, Kevin Keegan, he wrote the foreword in my autobiography. And I've known Kevin since I was 5 years old. Watching him play, and then watching what he did when he came back as a manager. And he's just such a nice guy, a really good guy. And that's what really I remember the most about Kevin.
You mentioned Kevin there. Obviously, he's a hugely inspirational figure. I mean, me and Johnny have never met him, never spoke to him. That's obviously a dream of ours, but he's inspiring, like just watching back in the day. And he was the reason I started supporting Newcastle United for the entertainers team back when you were winning gold in Atlanta. But has he ever give you a kind of Kevin Keegan styly team talk before a big tournament before, just to give you a kick up the backside?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I went down to the training ground at when he trained at in Durham, just before my first Paralympics in 1996, and then went down and seen Kevin and said, I'm going to the Paralympics. And he was like, just float as far as you can. And that was his advice. So pretty good advice. So Kevin was somebody who, he could light up a room, he could make you feel relaxed, make you laugh, he's got a great sense of humor. I think that's why it was such a success in the castle because he created that atmosphere where you could have a laugh, have a bit of fun, and made everybody relaxed. And yeah, it was great to be a part of that.
I think that's fantastic. Like, just tells you, Stephen, just throw it really far. I just think that's so basic, but it works.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep it simple, definitely.
When obviously the club throw is really what you've been made famous for. Of course, you've done discus as well. But what is the biggest technique for someone that has to just throw it so far? I know we've talked about how simple it is and how, you know, Kevin Keegan's trying to simplify it, but what for you, Stephen, is the biggest technique to make sure that you get the distance in the throw?
Well, it's quite funny because the way I throw is pretty unusual. I throw it backwards, and it wasn't always the way I do. I mean, when I was younger, I tried to throw it forward, like most people throw the club forward, like a javelin, or sideways, like a discus. So, and I couldn't really do that. So, but yeah, it was my first coach who helped me to discover the technique of throwing backwards, which when I first started doing it, it was a bit scary because, yeah, when you throw backwards, you can't see where it's going to land. You don't particularly know where it's going to go, so you need to have a lot of trust. I think the key thing for me was developing that ability to release the club at the right time, because, yeah, when you're throwing backwards, you're just aiming for a point in space because you can't particularly look where you're going to throw. So you had to do a lot of practice, a lot of repetition, just getting used to releasing the club at the right time and getting it to go in the right direction. And so once I got that, then the rest kind of came naturally. But yeah, the release is probably the most important thing.
Yeah, it may be unorthodox, but you've certainly mastered it, winning what you've won. I don't think you've done too bad out of it. Yeah. Can you remember back in 96, which your first time at the Olympics over in Atlanta and medaling? What are your memories from that time back when, of course, Newcastle were spending world record amounts on Alan Shearer?
If we can see the video, I've got the medal here from
Oh my goodness!
So that's the gold medal from Atlanta.
Wow,
that is absolutely incredible.
We had Joseph Craig on, who won gold in 2012 in one of our really early shows, and he can't find his gold medal, and I was so disappointed. But there, you bang straight away. Here are my medals. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think it's a bit of an antique now. Like, it's like 25 years ago, but I think for me, I was so young in Atlanta, it's all a little bit of a blur. I mean, I was one of the youngest members of the team. I'd never been away without my parents before, so to go all the way to America, I was just like, I was loving being away on my own. I think the important thing for me was I had a lot of people around me to help me to keep my feet on the floor, because when you go to Paralympics, there's a lot going on that you can get distracted by. I didn't compete till the very last day of the Paralympics, so I had a long time to wait to make my debut. And actually, the night I competed, my competition got delayed by 4 hours because of a hurricane. So, yeah, that was a pretty good way to start your Paralympic career. But, yeah, I wasn't really expecting anything. I just went in to enjoy it. I came back with a gold medal, which is incredible.
Always save the best till last. That's what I always get told anyway. Yeah. But Stephen, obviously, you've been to Atlanta, you've been to Sydney, you've been to Athens, but 2012, to be captain of Team GB for the Paralympic team, the men's captain. I know 2012 didn't go the way you wanted it to go in terms of competing, because you had to kind of go through the pain barrier to even compete and to even compete at a good standard, Stephen. It's an absolute credit to you. But to get the honour of being the men's captain, that must fill you with an immense pleasure.
Yeah, I've got the best behind me. As you can see, they're the best on the water. So, yeah, I think London was, very bittersweet for me. A huge honour to be the team captain and to compete at the home Paralympics is, something I never forget. To just be part of those games, I think it's going to take a lot to top what we did in London. I think to be part of that is something special. For me personally, it didn't really work out the way I wanted it to. I just kind of had my bad injury at the wrong time, but that can happen in sport. I don't look back and don't regret anything, I worked hard to get to the games. I think I deserved to be in the team. I'd competed well up to that point. I actually won the European title that year, so I had a pretty decent year. I think my body just gave up on me at the wrong point, but when you're competing in sport, that can happen.
You say you've not got any regrets, and obviously it's one of these things, as you say, in sport, injuries happen. But would you swap your three golds for a London 2012 gold, or are you more than happy with your medal collection as it is?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think no. I wouldn't swap anything, because I think to win three gold medals on the bounce, many people can do that, in the same event, to dominate one event for a decade is, pretty incredible. And, I'm over 40 now and still competitive. I wouldn't swap any of the medals that I won.
Good answer. That's what I like. But from the start, because you've been to so many Paralympic Games, you must have seen a massive growth in the event over time, because it's massive now, isn't it?
Yeah. Paralympic sport is, it's huge. It's professional, it's world class. I mean, when I started in Atlanta, we didn't get any funding. It was very much, amateur sport. I mean, it was still pretty high standard, but there wasn't any professional Paralympic athletes back then. And then now, I would say pretty much every athlete that competes in the Paralympics is a professional athlete. And you can see that with the standard and the performances that are going up. And look at my event, the Club Pro. Years ago, if you could pro over 30 meters, you'd be guaranteed a medal. And now, I think last year, the top, he had it for 3 years to get in the top 10 in the world. So that's how much it's gone up. So,
what you've talked about the standards there, and obviously you just said 30 meters, you might not even get a medal now. Where do you think it will go in the next 10 years, Stephen? Do you think you might have to get to 35, 36 meters, 40 meters just to even get a medal in, say, 10 years' time? What do you think?
I think. That's the nature of sport. That's the nature of human evolution, you know, always progressing, always getting better, finding ways to train harder, to train longer. And that's what you see. That's why in athletics, not many world records last for more than 10 years because of that natural progression. And that's really good. It's good to see that that's happening in Paralympic sport now. I mean, Paralympic sport compared to Olympic sport is fairly new. If you think about Olympic sport, it's been around for hundreds of years, whereas Paralympic sport, you're looking at maybe 50, 40 years that people have been training properly. So, yeah, I think you're going to see even more progression. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next few Paralympic cycles, it would take mid to late 30s to get on the podium. But I'll probably be retired by then, hopefully.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. You can take all your medals. They're fine. You don't have to worry. Out of all the medals you've won, Stephen, world titles, Olympic titles, Europeans, what was that one that really stands out for you and thought I was at the peak of my powers?
Yeah, that year I'm going to pick a medal where I didn't win a gold. So I was, when I competed in Beijing in 2008. So really, really great competition, really good standard. Back then, it was actually two different classifications combined together on a point table. So it made it even harder to win a medal, but in Beijing, I was down in fourth place, and on my last throw, pulled out probably one of the best throws in my career to go up to second. So for me, that's a moment that I'm incredibly proud of. And it's the best. It's the furthest I've ever thrown in a major championship, and to do it in that position, in that moment, is something that, yeah, that's why you put all the work in, that's why you train really deep so that you can perform when you need to. And as an athlete, you don't get more satisfaction than that.
I can only imagine.
yeah, you're a real prime athlete, Johnny, aren't you?
With me and you, Sam, I feel like I'm probably a slightly more of a prime athlete, only in Mars, but I'll tell you.
I don't know, dart players are classed as athletes nowadays.
Stephen, 2016 was a huge year for you, competing in another Olympics, getting the bronze medal. And I want you to confirm a story for me, Stephen, if you can. Did Sir John Hall, obviously one of the big, big names of Newcastle United, did he donate an amount of money to make sure that your mum could actually watch you at the Olympics?
Yeah, Sir John. Yeah, he kindly helped us out to help make sure that my mum, who's also my coach, could go to the games and support me at the games. So, yeah, it was really generous of Sir John. I've known Sir John for a lot of years, and he's always been a big supporter of mine. And again, he's a really, really nice, down to earth guy. I just seen him a couple of weeks ago, actually, because I was out for a meal for my birthday, and he was in the same restaurant having a meal, and he came over to speak, and it looked really well. Looked really well.
It's fantastic news, isn't it, Sam?
How we'd love an owner in that, like nowadays, like Sir John Hall, who had that ambition and drive to really make Newcastle United compete. He's real great character, isn't he, Stephen?
Yeah, yeah. It was a different era, wasn't it? I think it's sad that you're not going to get that kind of owner again because, you know, Sir John didn't really have, like he's a wealthy guy, but like he didn't have that much money. But the way he harnessed what he had and the way he built the castle up, it was incredible. And it's just, those days in football are probably gone, which is really sad.
Yeah, 100%. Go on, Sam.
It's just incredible that you must have to kind of pinch yourself sometimes, Stephen, that sort of, your own phrase there, like for throwing a club, you get to know people like Kevin Keegan, Sir John Hall, and so massive Newcastle United legends. I mean, for a boyhood Newcastle fan, that's living the dream in more ways than one.
Yeah, it's crazy. You're thinking, why would Sir John Hall want to come and talk to me? I'm just some skinny ginger kid from Cramington, you know. It is incredible. And I always remember how lucky I am to have the opportunities that I've had and have the support I've had. And I never forget that, you know. You've always got to remember who you are and where you come from.
Rightly so. And also in 2016, Stephen, an MBE from a lad from Cramlington. What is that experience like? Is it tough to pick people to go and, well, basically be with you for the day? Or what happens to someone that gets an MBE nowadays?
So I think I found out quite a long time before. It was like just before Christmas, I got the letter in the post, I thought it was a wind-up at first. Because it just came out of the blue, you just got a letter in the post saying, you've been nominated for an MBE, and you've been accepted. Galusi gets announced on New Year's Day in the honours list, so things went a bit crazy for a few days after that. And but then when I came round to getting the award, it was such a great day. And it wasn't hard to pick who I wanted to come with me, because I picked my family. And my family are the people who been there all the time for me, so I didn't need to think twice about that. So to go down to Buckingham Palace, my mom, my brother, and my wife, it was a great moment in there to get the award of Prince William. It was pretty special. So it was actually the first time I'd met Prince William, so it was pretty cool to get the award off him.
Did you have much of a conversation with Prince William? Did he ask you for club throwing lessons?
He was saying that good luck when you go to Rio, and he told us to wear sun cream because of me ginger hair. bit of advice there.
It's not bad for a bit of advice from the future king of England. But what gave you more pleasure, Stephen? The MBE or the freedom of Cramlington? Because I know you got the freedom of Gateshead as well. But obviously the freedom of Cramlington. What can you do in Cramlington and Gateshead now? Can you literally just walk into any shop in Cramlington and Gateshead? You don't have to pay for anything. What do you have to do? What can you do with that honour?
I'm not sure. There's loads of different things that people tell you that you can do. Like you can graze your sheep on the grass. I did hear a story once that if you get drunk, the police have to take you home. But I don't know if that's true or not. But Yes, you don't do things in life to get awards. It's really nice to get recognized and get awards, but it's not my prime reason for doing things. You know, my prime reason is to have fun and to enjoy what I do and try to be successful. That's the main thing. To get awards on the back of that is, yeah, it's a bit of a bonus, but yeah, to get the thing with Gates Head was incredible. Actually, Brendan Foster came to the ceremony when I got the thing with Gates Head and he spoke, which was really nice. The thing with Cameron, and I think I was the first ever person to get the freedom of traveling in. So that was pretty cool.
Oh, I can imagine. If only so.
Did you get the ceremonial big key, or is it just nice that you can just go out on the last round Cramlington and know that the coppers have to take you home and can't, and you're pretty bulletproof?
Yeah. No, you just get like a little, you get a scroll. Like a scroll that you can hang up on the wall. It's so nice to get these things. Because, yeah, they're things that not many people get, and they're quite rare to be given out.
Yeah, very rare. Right, let's talk about Newcastle United, Stephen. Obviously, you talked about being a massive, important part of your life as Newcastle United Football Club. You talk about Kevin Key, and I can imagine that's probably one of your first memories of supporting in the club, but what's been the best match that you've seen? You don't have to have been there, you just might have seen it on the telly, you might have been there in person. What one match sticks out for you?
Well, my first ever game, I think it was about 4 or 5, was Kevin Keegan's testimonial when he got picked up in a helicopter. So it's pretty good first game to go to. But I remember being really disappointed after that. The next game I went to, there wasn't a helicopter at the end of the game. But I think for me, the best match I went to was Milan away in Champions League, the 2-2. I was in the away end. I was supposed to be in the wheelchair section, but ended up in the away end, just like sitting on the steps in the middle of the away end, and the atmosphere was unbelievable. I think it was probably about 9 or 10,000 people in the away end. I think, I don't know what the capacity was, but I think it was over capacity by a long way. But I don't actually think I swore a lot of the game, but I didn't see the goals. And then every time we scored, you end up about 10 meters away from where you were before the goal. It was such a great game to go to. And to be in the Champions League, competing with the likes of Inter Milan in the San Siro was unbelievable.
What a performance that night as well. And if we'd have just held on at 2-1, we could have maybe even made it out of that second group stage. But
yeah, no, I mean, Lone Robert was on fire that game. I unbelievable. The crosses he put in were crazy.
Sam, if I may just butt in, I have to ask Stephen a very simple question. Stephen, you haven't seen a Macan in Milan, have you?
No, definitely no Macan in Milan.
I don't think anyone ever will. But you mentioned obviously Keegan and Sir John Hall. Did you ever have any meetings or dealings with Sir Bobby?
Yeah, I did. I knew Sir Bobby pretty well as well. And I do. It's quite funny because we still see his wife, Elsie, quite a lot. And every time I see her, she comes up and says, "Stephen, I see you every day," because when Bead World opened in Southamptonshire, the Queen came to open it, and me and Bobby were there, and actually got a photograph. Me and Bobby and the Queen, and Elsie said, It's on the top of their staircase, so every day I see my face every day. So I said, well, I'm very sorry about that. It's been really hard, but again, like Kevin and John, Bobby was a genuine person that really would talk to anybody, dead down to earth, and just loved football, genuinely loved football. To spend time with him was something that I'm very fortunate to do. I remember I watched a friendly game sitting next to him, and he never stopped talking the whole game. The whole game just talking about all the players, about the way they were playing, and it was unbelievable, guy.
Oh, what a man. Sir Blair Robson, we'd love him back in a heartbeat at Newcastle United. But the man in the hot seat right now, Stephen, is Steve Bruce. And obviously, Steve Bruce has been in charge of Newcastle for the last 2 years, 13th place in his first season. He improved 12th place last season after a tough, tough season, it has to be said, even though the finish was quite good for Newcastle's standards. What have you made of this season, Stephen? Were you dreading the worst?
You know what? I wasn't inspired when Bruce was appointed, like most people, but I actually think he's done a really good job in the circumstances. Yeah, I think he probably deserves a little bit more credit than he's been getting. I think we did struggle a little bit in towards the middle to the end of the season, like around Christmas into spring. But like, you've got to look at the amount of injuries he had in the COVID situation. A lot of players suffered with COVID. And I think you saw at the end of the season that when we get our best players fit on the pitch together, we've actually got a decent team. And that's been the big problem, just keeping our best players. But if you can get Wilson, Maximum, Almiron on the team together, then yeah, you're gonna cause any team problems. So I don't think things are particularly as bad as some fans make out, but that's kind of my mentality. I'm a glass half full kind of person. I try to be positive, and that's my take on it, really.
I mean, we kind of all try and be positive, but after that Brighton away game, did you not think, oh, hang on, we're in trouble here?
Yeah, I think when Fulham got within 1 point, I think when Fulham, yeah, I started to think, yeah, this could be bad. But yeah, I think at football, and I did hope deep down it would have enough. I think when Fulham beat Liverpool away, I was like, oh, God, terrible. But yeah, Fulham just kind of went out of steam after that. And I think that was probably at a time when Liverpool were the lowest and everybody was kind of beating Liverpool at that point. we got a draw and we should have probably beat them. I think for us, I would stick with Steve for now. I think he's got the players behind him. I think the players are playing for him, which is one of the most important things in football. What's going to happen with the ownership? Yeah, we don't know. You can't control that, unfortunately. You know, we're just fans. And I try to just focus on the football and supporting the team the best I can. I think I think we should be a comfortable mid-table team with the players we've got. And hopefully next season we can keep our best players and maybe add a few more and maybe creep into the top 10. That's what I'll be hoping. And so I'll be hoping for, but we'll probably end up playing relegation again, knowing Newcastle.
Definitely. One person that a lot of Newcastle fans want to see in a Newcastle shirt next season is Joe Willock. And do you think, Stephen, we'll get to see Joe Willock in a Newcastle shirt next season?
Nah.
No.
No.
Hang on, you were glass half full 5 minutes ago.
I know, but I'm also realistic in there. unless we get another loan deal, I don't think we're going to buy Joe Willock. He just signed a six-year deal at Arsenal, so to buy him is going to cost a lot of money that I don't think we've you're probably talking 40, 50 million to get a player like Joe Willock. I would think, because English player, 21, 22, he scored how many goals in how many? Is it 7 goals in?
Yeah, 7 in a row.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're not going to get a player like that on the cheap. So, I think it's very unrealistic that. I'd love to see it because obviously it was a revelation at the end of the season. You never know. Depends with Arsenal as well, whether they think he's going to fit in to their system. They might want to give him one more year out on loan. Hopefully that's the case. Yeah, just had to wait and see.
Just to pick up on something you said earlier, which I thought was absolutely spot on when you just touched on the ownership. You said that you were just kind of not really taking any notice and just supporting the team and focusing what's happening on the pitch, which I think is 100% the right thing to do, because after the past 12 months, when we were all dragged through the whole rigmarole of hashtag cans and, you know, I would have had to have messaged you to see if I could borrow the freedom of Gateshead so I could not get into trouble with the police for drunken loutishness. But do you think there's any hope for this takeover, or is it just a case now of just completely switch off from it? It's not going to happen until the day comes that it's been officially announced.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just really don't know. I think I've never been one to get too concerned about takeovers and ownership, because really, deep down, I don't think any owner will be that much different, because they're all multi-billionaires now. They're all like, they're all massive companies, really. Anyone who owns a football club has to be multi-billion pound. Like, if you look at Man City, it's basically a country that owns the club. Qatar owns Man City, and the same with PSG. You're competing against countries. I think for me, the days of like John Holland, like local guys running the club, it's gone. And that's taken away a lot of romance for me, which is why I try not to think too much about it. And in a way, yeah, if we got taken over, there might be a cash injection at the beginning, but if they don't have instant success, is that going to continue? And are they going to be that bothered about the club if we're fighting relegation or go down? Like, if you look at what's happened in Sunderland, you know, that's the kind of thing that can happen. So, for all that Mike has done wrong, I think what you can say is when we have gone down, he hasn't given up on us. He's got one back up. Now, he hasn't got the ambition to get any higher up, which is sad, but that's where we are at the minute. So that's really my concern about ownership and take all that. If it happens, then yeah, it would be great, but you know, money doesn't guarantee your success.
Yeah, it's 100%. That's completely true. I completely agree with everything you said there, Stephen, because obviously you can potentially get the good side of any takeover and a bad side of any takeover. So it's definitely one you've got to look at with a bit of caution as well, but with maybe a little bit of optimism. Maybe if you're a glass half full kind of person, like you said before, Stephen, we'll definitely keep an eye on it.
Yeah, I think it would be great to be. I think Newcastle is the kind of club that should be trying to at least for the top six. If we look at the fan base and the passion for football in the area, then yes, Newcastle probably should be looking higher up, but there's probably a lot of other clubs that would say the same, like the likes of Leeds, maybe even like, you know, like Everton, like that kind of, these kind of clubs who have big supporter bases. So, but I guess everyone looks at Man City and thinks, well, if they did it, we can do it. But it took Man City quite a long time to get to where they are now. So I think a takeover would be great because in the present situation, we can't dream any higher than where we are now, really. And that's what the fans want. They just want that hope that isn't there at the minute. And so that's what would be the best thing.
Yes, spot on. We're not asking to go back to Milan right away, but you know, maybe one day it'd be nice to go back, wouldn't it? Let's face it.
We did have that one season under Pardew that was pretty cool. But,
even that, when you think about it, that's nearly like 10 years ago now. Like I saw on Twitter today that it was 10 years to the day that Yohan Cabaye signed for Newcastle. What a player he was. That was 10 years ago.
Well, if you think about that team, they had Yohan Cabaye, Ben Haddon Ben Arfa, you had Denver Ball, these are the kind of players you want to see. And we're getting there a little bit with St. Maximum, you know, these are the kind of players that we want to see in Newcastle United. So hopefully if we can keep hold of St. Maximum, that might help us to attract some more players of that kind of ilk.
100%. Well, let's just hope that next season we can all go to St. James's Park. You can show off your gold medals, Stephen, after you've done exceptionally well. So,
yeah, do you do that when you go into a game? Instead of buying a ticket, you just roll up and just go, just flash the gold, and they go,
I did get I have been invited into the German suite a couple of times, and it's pretty cool. Right? You get a sit-down meal before the match. You get like cheese and crackers at half time, sweet ball, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you haven't got a couple of, you don't need a couple of managers, do you, Steve, for the next home game?
A couple of plus ones.
You only tend to get invited if we win a medal at the Paralympics, so I'd have to try and win a medal in Tokyo.
You can do that. No bother.
Stephen, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you for the last 45 minutes, nearly an hour of your time, talking all things gold medals and Newcastle United. I think it's the perfect combination. Sam, where can people get this podcast from?
So the podcast is available for download every Tuesday. And then if you're watching this on YouTube, all the previous episodes are in the description below. So please subscribe and rate the podcast 5 stars.
Stephen, we'd like to wish you all the very best in Tokyo, and please come back with a medal. And if you can show us, that would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah, it's been good.
Well, for myself, Sam Mulner, and Stephen Miller, MBE, we'll see you all very, very soon.